So welcome, everybody. So my name is Carrie, those who I haven't met. Tonight is supposed to be a recap and discussion. I'm not great with recaps, so we'll see. My plan is a short, like a Dharmet recap-ish and a discussion. This is a poem by Rosemary Wotola Tromer. On Earth, just a teaspoon of neutron star would weigh 6 billion tons. 6 billion tons equals the collective weight of every animal on Earth, including the insects. Times 3. 6 billion tons sounds impossible until I consider how it is to swallow grief. Just a teaspoon, and one might as well have consumed a neutron star. How dense it is, how it carries inside it the memory of collapse, how difficult it is to move then. How impossible to believe that anything could lift that weight. There are many reasons to treat each other with great tenderness. There are many reasons to treat each other with great tenderness. One is the sheer miracle that we are here together on a planet surrounded by dying stars. One is that we cannot see what anyone else has swallowed. May each of us be well in body and mind. May each of us be free of confusion and fear. May each of us take care of ourselves and each other with ease. And may we continue to grow in wisdom, compassion, and freedom in our own unique ways. Yeah, I clearly neglected to say the name of the poem that I read, which people asked. So the name of the poem is Watching My Friend Pretend Her Heart Isn't Breaking. Yeah. So it's by Rosemary Wotola Tromer. Just a beautiful, beautiful poet practitioner. But I found it very moving. Poem. So we're exploring the Eightfold Path this month. And this path is the way, said to be the way to the ending of suffering. So the progression is that we really recognize in a clear way there is a path. That sounds so simple, but in the heat of the moment, I don't know about you, but in the heat of the moment, we need very simple, direct reminders. So there is a way, which is really different than there is one right way. It's different than that. The way means, remembering that there's a way means that it's possible to work with these circumstances in a helpful, onward leading way. Right? So I need not believe my perceptions and conclusions about the world from where I stand, but there is a way to practice with this. So one of the problems I have with recaps is that, you know, the second night's supposed to be a recap of what you talked about. One is that I forget what I talked about. And the second is that because I don't have long periods of time to prepare talks anymore, different things start enter my mind at different times. So I'll be driving and something will occur to me. I'll get out of the shower and something will occur to me. So as I was contemplating this fourth noble truth or eightfold path, doing the dishes one day, something sort of fully formed sort of arose in my mind as I was doing the dishes. And so this was a number of months ago, and I wrote it down. So what I'll do is I'll just speak a little bit, just offer some reflections about the way, the path, and then I'll read what kind of came through as I was contemplating several months ago that goes through briefly in kind of these short verses, how each of the factors of the path feeds and supports each other. So there was one part, I don't think I brought it. So what we're tempted to do in the heat of the moment is to kind of believe the perception of the world that is governed or colored by any particular emotion or reaction that's moving through our heart and mind, right? So if we are in fear, or if we are in despair, if we are in anger, our first, which is completely normal and human these days, every day, but things are a bit heightened right now. So it's so tempting to believe the world that fear generates, to believe the story that fear tells, or anger or despair, to believe that story, and then the world becomes a fearful world, or it becomes a despairing world, or it becomes an irritating world. And that perception fuels more reactivity and more a solidification of view. Right? So this is how reactivity creates kind of a down, what I think of as a downward spiral, right? Something is moving through us. We kind of fail to recognize it. So it colors everything. And then we react to our perception and the whole thing continues to kind of deepen. This is not a moral failing. This is kind of the way that reactivity works. So the first move is to say to ourselves, there is a path, there is a way, to really recognize that there is a way. Not there is a right way and I'm doing it wrong, but there is a way to relate to this that is helpful and life-giving and leads towards unbinding, releasing, and letting go. So the beautiful part of all of the wholesome aspects of these teachings, these practices, whether it's the qualities of the divine abodes, the Brahmaviharas, or the paramis, the perfections of the heart, the five faculties, and then here in the Eightfold Path, the wonderful part of it is that these qualities are practices. They're ways that we can frame and relate to our experience, but they're also expressions of the heart when it is more free, when it is more open, when it is more aligned and attuned. So the factors of the Eightfold Path each start with this word, samma. So sometimes it's translated as right. At times I've preferred to use wise, because with wise is like, it's a little bit clearer that it's something that deepens over time. It grows, our wisdom deepens over time. Another translation is attuned. So is attuned to the way that things actually are, and attuned to the unbinding or the releasing of the heart. So it's helpful to remember, it's helpful for me to remember that we're always cultivating something. Yeah, this is like the famous saying, we're always practicing something. Yeah. So we're always cultivating something. To remember that the sort of task or invitation, when we remember there is a path, the path can be cultivated. It should be cultivated. Yeah, that's the first part. First part is remembering, oh, there is a way, there is a path. There is a way to bring this to practice, to include this. The path is to be cultivated. So this is like saying, let this, whatever's happening, whatever circumstance I'm in, let this help deepen my understanding, deepen my practice. Let me bring this to practice. The path is being cultivated. And then as we go, we can recognize, oh, okay, there has been some understanding, some deepening, some not perfect, but there is some sense of a flow or an onward leading path that we're a part of. It has been cultivated. It is moving through me, or it is supporting me. Right? So hopefully we can get a sense of how that deepens. I find three much more, three is easier than eight to grasp, especially in the moment. So sometimes the Eightfold Path, and I mentioned this last week, is talked about as a threefold training. So the threefold training is ethical sensitivity, that's in the middle, where we are aware of how we're speaking, how we're acting, how we're aligned with the precepts, how we're consuming or serving. So this is the ethical sensitivity fold of the threefold training. The samadhi fold, or the gatheredness of mind, the steadiness or collectedness of mind, is the next fold. And this is how we endeavor to become more and more continuously aware in sitting practice, but in everything we're doing. So in this fold, it's called samadhi in Pali, but it's also sometimes talked about as concentration, but I prefer gatheredness, steadiness, collectedness. This is where we cultivate the mind training, the steadiness of heart and mind that can help support our clear seeing. So you can see how the attentiveness to how we are relating to the world, the ethical sensitivity, supports a certain kind of steadiness or continuity of awareness. So sometimes when we're reflecting on the precepts and benefits for keeping the precepts, it's talked about, or we can experience that when we sit down after having given thought to our ethical life, how we're coming from non-harming, or how we're reducing our impact, our harmful impact on the world. Then when we sit down to practice, or when we bring mindfulness to the fore, we may be able to sense a certain settledness, a certain greater ease, sometimes talked about as the bliss of blamelessness, right? Bliss might be a little strong, but we can sense a certain ease of heart. So many of us experience this on retreat when the sila is kind of taken care of for you. You're not talking to anyone. There's no possibility to kind of binge on whatever. You're filled more or less with the Dharma and with nature. So we can really see how ethical sensitivity supports a settledness, a continuity of awareness, which then supports clear seeing, the wisdom aspect. That deepens our view. So this is view and intention. And then we can see more clearly areas in which we may be moving in the direction of harm or non-harm. So this is a kind of positive spiral, yeah, or helpful spiral, in that rather than kind of devolving into reactivity that is very self-reinforcing, this is a spiral that is onward leading. Right? So ethical sensitivity, supporting an easeful and steady heart mind, which supports clear seeing, which supports greater relationship and sensitivity in the world. So this is a way of reminding ourselves there is a path, right? There is a kind of direction, a helpful deepening. It doesn't mean that there aren't challenges. That doesn't mean that we aren't stuck in reactivity many times. But that remembering, there is a path, there is a way. Let me kind of check out these three areas and bring awareness to these three areas and see if I can remember or re-enter. There's one sutta. So this is how we cultivate, right? This is how we cultivate. And there are times in our practice where one of these areas will feel much more alive than the others. But it's in those times where we can really see how they all support and interweave each other. So many people right now are asking questions around ethics. What does it mean to live a life of non-harming in these times? What does it mean to be committed to peace in these times? Yeah, in order to ask that question in a helpful way, we need the steadiness of our meditative training, and we need some degree of wise view, or knowing the approach and the orientation that we're coming from when we ask a question like that. At other times, how to work with our own heart and mind will be primary, you know? So I think back to what sparked my own journey initially, and there was definitely an intellectual kind of curiosity about the practice, but on a very practical, fundamental level, I just wanted to get through the day without crying. Yeah. I just wanted to get through the day with a steadiness of heart and an ability to respond well. Yeah. So often when we think about the path, it can feel quite grand, quite separate from what we're in the middle of. But every time we ask these questions about ethics, about how we're approaching, about what our attitude of mind is, about what supports does this body, heart, mind need in order to settle and have a sense of ease and perspective, we are cultivating the path. We are cultivating something that's onward leading. So the Buddha at one point was in conversation with a farmer, and there was a wonderful dialogue and conversation, which there often is, and was asking, so what are the three urgent duties of a farmer? The farmer who also cultivates everything, you know, many things are similes. So this cultivation simile is repeated again and again. And for the farmer, he was reflecting, for the farmer, it is to plow the field, so work with the soil, plant the seeds, and water. Yeah. Those are the kind of jobs, or that's the kind of influence that the farmer can have. That's the task of the farmer. The farmer does not create the crops. The farmer does not control the weather. The farmer does not produce the water. The farmer's job is to cultivate. And so this path, in a similar way, Buddha said, our job when we cultivate is to heighten our awareness of ethics or integrity. Our job is to heighten our awareness of our mind's ability to be aware in a continuous and steady way. That is something that we have a lot of influence over. And our job is to cultivate our discernment, to continue to cultivate our discernment, which deepens into wisdom. That is a sense of what is helpful and what is not. What is helpful and what is not. And so those three, again, so that in the Pali, it's sila, samadhi, panya. Sila, samadhi, panya. Ethical sensitivity, meditative stability, continuity of awareness, and wisdom, always supporting each other. So this is the threefold training. So these are the areas where we have influence. These are the areas where we have a lot of room to take the kind of compost of our life, the circumstances that we're in, the difficulties, the suffering that we experience, and bring them to this path as training, right? So my teacher's Jennifer Wellwood says, the beautiful thing is that we never run out of material. There's always compost. There's always material, right? So this is the material. The path is not other than your life. Yeah. This is the material for transformation. So more and more we're inclined to bring everything. And more we recognize that nothing is left out. Yeah. We can bring all of it. Giving a talk the other night, or no, I was with my Vashon Insight Sangha, and somebody, my one lovely Kalyanamita Will, Sangha friend, brought up this quote, which I love. So this is from Brian Kloss, who wrote a book called Fluke, Chance, Chaos, and Why Everything We Do Matters. It's a wonderful title. I haven't read the book. But the quote was, we control nothing, but we influence everything. Right? We control nothing. This is like the farmer not being able to control the weather, where the water comes from, any of it. But we influence everything, right? So we can fully participate. We can fully engage. But that perspective is everything, that everything we do matters, and we are not in control. Okay, so this is why I can't do recaps, because I've just veered completely off. And I went in a completely different direction. But what I want to do is read, as a way of contemplating, the Eightfold Path in verses. All right, so this won't take long. But what would be helpful is if you could, as we were doing during the sit, see if you can listen with your whole body. So there have been, I've noticed so often lately, and I recognize this in myself, that there is a kind of scramble in our minds for information to get it, to get something to hang on to from a talk. Let me get hold of this. What was that? What was that quote? Where can I find this information? Where can I get it? And some of it is wonderful, and I share that curiosity. But there can also be a trust in the Dharma, that by sitting here, by listening, by just resonating, however we do, we are cultivating. Yeah? You don't have to make the path happen. You don't have to drive it forward. Right? So the quote that I offered from Ajahn Sumedho last week, I don't think I'm going to be able to find it, but it says, we use our bodies. Body is kind of like sila. We engage our hearts. This is our heart mind. And we engage our understanding. So our intellect, our intellectual understanding, our reasoning, but a deeper kind of understanding, which is an understanding of our whole being. So body, heart, and mind are all engaged. So we can, as we listen, so we just listen, see if you can listen with all of the centers, right? Not just the conceptual center. Okay. So, wise view. We are not the center. We are not the center. Everything arises and ceases according to natural laws, no matter how much we may wish it were otherwise. Understanding and aligning with these laws brings peace. Forgetting or resisting them brings suffering. We are each the inheritors of tremendous kindness and tremendous delusion, both. What we do now, others will inherit. What we do now, others will inherit. So this is all wise view. We have patterns in the mind that move towards greed, hatred, and delusion, and those that move towards generosity, kindness, and clarity. We are always practicing something. Conditioning is like a flood, but we do have influence. We can steer. Knowing deeply our own minds and tendencies, we can choose what we set in motion. But this is wise intention. What you say and how you say it matters. The words you utter may stay with someone for a lifetime. Words are a reflection of the mind that uttered them. Choose your words with care and receive others' words with understanding as best you're able. It's wise speech. Aware of the harm that human beings have caused each other throughout time, develop your sensitivity to how you impact others. Everything you do has a reverberation, an echo that will continue for a long time. Be careful, but be willing to make mistakes again and again and again. Create your own vow to not perpetuate harm and to contribute to well-being in your own way. Be humble and attempt to repair wherever possible. This is wise action. If possible, do not let the way you make your living exhaust your precious energy. Use your work, your skills, and energies to uplift, support, and care wherever possible. It is not always possible. Learn how to become aware of whenever the need to be efficient, productive, or recognized eclipses your connection with your own humanness or that of others. Wise livelihood. Do not struggle with any aspect of yourself or your experience. Recognize the healthy and helpful when you see it. Learn how to stay close to it, to follow it, develop it. Recognize the unhelpful and unhealthy whenever you see it. Learn how to question its assumptions. Don't pick it up, abandon it. It's wise effort. Bring all of your attention to bear on what arises in this present moment's experience, internally and externally. Know that you are knowing. Know that you are knowing. Learn about your own mind, what strengthens it and gladdens it, what weakens it and fragments it. When you sit, all of your karmic conditioning, your patterns and tendencies will arise to be known and understood and held in compassion. None of it is solid, none of it is ultimately satisfying, and none of it is yours. This changes your relationship to everything. That's wise mindfulness. Healthy and helpful qualities will support the quieting and collecting of your own mind. A happy and blameless mind naturally concentrates. Use the power of undistracted knowing to deepen your understanding of what you are not and what you are. Wise concentration or samadhi. The sense of being a separate self arises and ceases according to its own natural laws. It is not a requirement, it is an option. The letting go can be sudden, as with a shock. It can be chosen, as with an intentional pause. It can also be learned, grown, cultivated, as with a shift in view. Seeing this more and more deeply, the bright, clear nature of the mind reveals itself. Seeing this more and more deeply, letting go happens. Understanding begets letting go. Letting go begets understanding. Develop a taste for how this process works. Okay. These are easy truths intellectually. They're not meant to be swallowed or ingested once. They're meant to be contemplated, circled around again and again and again. Okay, so why don't we just sit quietly for a moment? And just notice. Any reverberations in your heart and mind just in this moment? No right or wrong, for or against. This is I'll just end with this short poem by a Zen practitioner, Myojin Steve Stuckey. And I've read this a few times. This is his death poem. This is the poem he uttered right before he died. This human body truly is the entire cosmos. Each breath of mine is equally one of yours, my darling. This tender abiding in my life is the fierce glowing fire of inner earth, linking with all pre-phenomena, flashing to the distant horizon, from right here now to just this. Now the horizon itself drops away. Bodhi Svaha. So much for a Dharmat. That's best laid plans, right? I hope some of this has been useful. We still have quite a bit of time for some discussion. More than anything, I hope you take away some trust and inspiration in your own ability to bring your circumstances, include your circumstances path. Okay, so what I'd like to do now is have us like to have people talk to each other for a little bit. Okay, so we'll don't start picking your partners yet, but we'll divide into groups of three. And the beauty of doing this in Sangha is that this is a little bit different than a chat, right? This is actually mindfulness in action. So we get to have the experience of taking the time that we need to reflect, to offer or share what we'd like, and to have others lend their mindfulness to us, yeah, to help support. So this isn't a time to give advice. This isn't a time to jump in and say, oh yes, my great aunt did the same thing. You know, it's this is, even if you feel a lot of appreciation and shared understanding, this is a time to, as each person is contributing, to give them their full mindful, aware presence without interruption, comment, or advice. Okay? And then we get the experience of being aware while we're speaking and being aware while we're listening. So this is not a presentation. You don't have to rehearse. There's no way to get it right or wrong. It doesn't mean that you have to bring a lot of kind of tension or anxiety to it, but you can bring an attentiveness to it. Okay, so what I'd like you to consider, reflect on together, we'll have about 15 minutes. So groups of three, if we can, and I'll maybe enlist Bob's help in a moment to help those online into a group. So to consider a circumstance in your life where there is some tension, challenge, or flat out dukkha. So it could be personal, it could be interpersonal, it could be collective, societal. So turning your attention towards some element of challenge, something that's challenging. And instead of turning towards your story around it, describing the ins and outs, who did what to who, what you think is going to happen, your analysis of the situation, consider what does it mean to bring the circumstance to the bath? Yeah. To include this circumstance as part of your bath. Yeah. So you could just float that as a question. What does it mean to include this as part of the path? How does that help me relate to that differently? If you'd like to go into questions around wisdom, around ethics, or around working with your own heart and mind, you may feel that one of those feels really predominant when you consider that. Yeah, I'm really considering ethical questions. What does it mean to be non-harming in this situation? What does it mean to be of service in this situation? Or maybe you're working primarily with your own, steadying your own heart and mind in that circumstance, or your understanding of it. So the very simplest would be, how do I include this as part of my path? And then if questions around ethics, samadhi, or wisdom are also there, wonderful. Yeah. You may feel that one of those is really primary. Okay. All right. Don't get too complicated. Stay simple. And just be surprised about what comes out. All right. So I'll ring the bell in 15 minutes, okay? We'll have 15 minutes. Okay, so we just have a few minutes left, but I really want to appreciate your courage and willingness to do this. Sometimes it's not easy to turn towards others in this way and contemplate in this way, and especially those online. I really want to thank you for staying and being willing to engage your practice in this way. Very easy for those online to just drop off when we get to this part, but I appreciate your courage and willingness to practice. And we have just a few minutes if anyone has any brief comments or reflections from your time in the groups. Yeah. I'm gonna wait for the coming.
Yeah. We were just talking about this. Is there a soul in Buddhism?
Ah, 8:52. too long for tonight. Yeah, I think in some ways it's a matter of language. It's a difference in language. So, but
I've always heard of some teachers talk about like the chitta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so chitta's like, yeah.
Interpreted that as the soul.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think that's a helpful direction. Yeah. Chitta, the heart mind. That is what we have influence over. So speaking about what we can influence and what we can't. That's the heart mind that is receptive, that it's open, that's where all of our responses and reactions come from. So that's when we talk about cultivating. That's what we can cultivate. So moving, as I understand it, the Buddha was moving away from the idea that the aim is some kind of future heaven. Yeah. So it's something that we can cultivate and actively engage in right now in the present moment. So I'm not sure I want to dive any further tonight, but really attending to the movements of that here and now. Yeah.
One thing that really stood out to me in our group was we all have a really similar experience, but one thing that was mentioned was that it's very easy for us to feel like we're the only ones feeling this way. If we're carrying some sort of pain or sorrow or dukkha in general, it's easy to feel like we're the only one going through this and nobody else understands what you're going through. But in our talk, we all had an extremely similar experience, and just recognizing that shared humanity, I think, is incredibly important in the practice.
Mm. Beautifully said. Thank you. Thanks for articulating that. Yeah. Liv, did you have something? Not sure.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I was also in that group.
Oh, okay.
And I had a similar kind of thought to share of like feeling the shared humanity and like the suffering, and also the shared humanity and similarity of our hearts like yearning towards like joy and expansion and softness. Felt like very, very tender and lovely.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Do you have a brief comment?
Yeah.
Sorry, Adam's getting a workout.
I think in our group we had a slightly different experience where all of our experiences were very different. It just really made me reflect both on your talk and the poem that you read about a teaspoon of grief and not knowing what kind of grief and sorrow others are carrying.
Thank you, everybody. We have to close for tonight. I really appreciate your practice and your willingness to engage both on the cushion on your own and also in community together. So this is what we can do for one another. This is one of the best fruits of being together, is being able to reflect and listen together. So thank you. And feeling some maybe wholesome regret that I wish we had had a little more time to hear. But we will continue these explorations and we'll go into each path factor now over the next few months. So we'll have a chance in many different formats and in different nights of the week, we'll have a chance to explore some of these, each path factor. So we'll start next month with right view or wise view, the first of the Eightfold Path. Okay, thanks everybody. Really appreciate it. Yeah.